You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I had an amazing conversation with Morgan Lander and SJ Jones about Kitty Pig. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Delirious Nomads podcast. I'm without Chris Santos this week, but he is coming back soon, and I do have a very good friend of mine, an old friend of mine who I recently reconnected with, Brian Landreth, merch guy to the punk stars, could we say, among other things?
Yeah, among other things. We ran into each other in a not punk show, but, you know, what are you going to do?
I feel like Killswitch Engage would view themselves as a punk band.
Well, the venue we were at was not punk at all.
I thought it was very punk. It was like almost like a VFW show.
But it was like the meeting place in a hotel.
This is true. It was like definitely the weirdest Killswitch Engage show in some time.
Yeah, the weirdest one I've ever done, for sure.
And you've done a bunch.
Yeah, they pop up every once in a while. You got to do a weird one.
So can you explain a little bit about what you do? Because it's kind of multifaceted and interesting.
I sell merch. I'm a merchandise manager for bands. And with Killswitch, they have their own merch company, which is how most bands operate. They'll have a merch company, and then there's the road rep who's out on tour. They have varying amounts of responsibility. So, you know, when I first started, I just showed up and sold t-shirts or whatever they had to sell. And as I've grown and continued on in this, I've started my own company. And so for some of the bands, I'll actually do the fulfillment of whatever they need for merch out on tour, and, you know, e-commerce as well. A lot of bigger bands will have a company and then just a guy out on the road who is just the rep that sells out there for them.
Right.
I just saw an opportunity where, like, well, I could do both, and then this could be more of a career than just a, not a hobby, but, you know, I could live off this, sustain off of this if I'm able to also be the company as well. So,
yeah. And so you started to do merch for like a few pretty cool bands, like selling on the web store side.
Yeah. I mean, I worked with them originally and I was just like, hey, I think I could do this. And it's more, you know, you'd be like the only band I work for, or a couple of them, and I can kind of cater to whatever you guys want to do or not do. It's really up to you. So that grew and grew. And then it kind of hit a point where I'm like, still touring because that's pretty good income, but the web store side of it was starting to get a little lax. So, at the beginning of this year, a couple of friends of mine started an imprint on another merch company, and we're kind of trying to focus building that right now. But yeah, it's been a ride. COVID definitely sent us down a different path than we thought it would, but that definitely helped keep me afloat, the whole e-commerce side of it. So that was nice.
Yeah, how was that merch business for you during COVID?
That's actually where I started to ramp it up. I was, you know, I had done two stores and it was kind of just limited drops and stuff. But then when COVID happened and I had nothing else to do and I realized that I could run this from where I lived, that's when I beefed it up a lot and tried to take on more clients because I had obviously a lot more free time. It's been fun. It continues to be fun. And now that I have eliminate having to do the fulfillment side of it out of my house, it's been a lot more fun.
Don't have to deal with customers.
Don't don't have to deal with customer service or anything like that. So it's been great.
So I have a couple questions based on this gig on both sides of the gig.
Sure.
So on a more practical, like, you know, you've sold more t-shirts than pretty much anyone else level. How do you organize yourself for this sort of stuff? Because like, I look at, like, I remember I was watching you the other day at Killswitch Engage.
Yep.
And you had like, you sold all the merch on your own. And I'm assuming you were doing it all on your own every other day of that tour.
Yeah.
How do you organize yourself so that you can sell thousands of dollars of merch without like going insane or pissing anyone off from having to wait too long?
Yeah. With them, they don't want another seller.
Sure.
They're like, you're our guy. You're out here. You're going to sell for us. With other bands I work for, they'll want that second seller so that there is no lines or shorter lines. But everyone is usually pretty cool when buying merch. I think they know that buying merch directly from a band at a show is the best way to support that band. They hire me. I'm an employee of the band and I sell directly, you know, from consumer to from, you know, the band or whatever. So I've been doing it long enough where, you know, after one or two shows, you kind of get an idea of the amount of stuff you want to bring in.
Right.
You don't want to bring in everything because then you're going to, like, for me, I have to count in and count out every single night.
Gotcha. So you limit the number of boxes you're doing total.
Yeah. So I think the show that you were at, we just had a shipment. We rushed ordered a shipment overnight to get shirts for that show and the show after that. Because before a tour, you do projections based on previous numbers of what you've sold. And it's basically an educated guess. And that's all you get. So in the case we had, one of the shirts that we thought would do okay ended up doing amazing. And we sold out of them in two shows. So we had to rush order and overnight some stuff. Yeah, as far as the one person versus the two person thing, like there's definitely positives to both. Like I said, Killswitch fans were really cool about, they were willing to wait. And that's really all I could ask. I try to move the line as fast as I can and be polite, but I try also not to cause conversations with people because then that's when the line stops. You want to just churn and burn.
Yeah. On that note, how do you set up a merch stand to kind of, and how much have you thought about like setting up the merch to maximize the sales that you're going to get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, for that one, I guess it didn't matter because it was such a short tour, but.
Sure. But I mean, like more broadly speaking.
Yeah. I usually try to keep the best sellers in the center, the best selling items dead center, and then branch out as it goes. You'll find that some shirts just don't sell as well as other ones. So you kind of don't give them prime location for, you know, people when they walk up there. You want, the best thing is to have less items because the more items you have, the more time it takes people to decide what to buy. So if you just have five really strong items, people have to make a decision out of that instead of 10 or 15. And most people, when they show up, they see the one that they like and they know, and then they buy it. So, yeah, you want to display it, best stuff in the middle and work out, and then try to have as less amount you could possibly have. Because I've done stuff where I've had 20 t-shirt designs and people come up there and they look like a deer in headlights because they don't know where to start. And then they just start, you know, their eyes just go everywhere and it takes a lot of time.
What's the ideal number of t-shirt designs? Like five or less?
I would say five's a good amount because you'd try to do like four short sleeve or whatever and then a hoodie. Maybe you do three short sleeve and then like a specialty item like a raglan or a ringer or a jersey or a long sleeve or whatever. You know, long sleeves at the moment are doing well, but you know, a couple of years ago, Raglan's did really well. So it's kind of just,
sure.
I follow a lot of graphic artists. I follow a lot of other merch people. I follow a lot of other merch companies. You want to always try to be, you know, in the know. And that's like anything, you know, I follow you and trends happen. And if you are serious about what you do, you want to try to stay on top of those and be aware because merch is such an important thing for musicians, especially at the DIY level. You know, you're ordering your own stuff. You don't want to be a DIY band and order way too much stuff and then be stuck with it at the end of the tour. You want to try to have nothing on that last day, maximize your profits.
Absolutely. Because now we're getting into like sort of a particularly dorky side of it. So we're talking about setting up these merch stands and getting five items. So what are like the specialty items you see doing surprisingly well? Like you mentioned long sleeves do well, but what else seems to really kill it?
I mean, tour shirts, there's always a person that wants the tour shirt to prove to whoever that they were there. So obviously if you're a smaller band, that can get weird because now you have an item that has an end date on it. And after that tour ends, now you have a shirt that's celebrating something that had already happened. So tour shirts are always the best seller, no matter what. Every band I've ever worked for, as long as it has those dates on the back.
Interesting.
For some of the bands I work for, we'll do an event tee. Like we'll do a t-shirt just for that event, just for one show. But, you know, again, if it's not a great shirt and you're stuck with it afterwards, now you have something commemorating an event that has passed and it's harder to sell it. So there's definitely a fine line. As far as like trinket items, that's what I call like items that go on a table or that aren't a shirt.
Sure.
That I think it really depends on genre and who the band is. Like, you know, I work for a lot of punk bands, so there's a lot of drinking. So koozies are always good. But then you're getting kind of into the world where it's like $5 items or less can just be kind of a pain in the ass. Like $5, but it costs you, you know, $1 or $2. So you're only making $3. So you got to sell X amount of more just to make it worth your while. So, you know, shirts are always where you're going to have the best margins. So that's where we try to, all the bands I work for, we really try to push the shirt thing because that's where you're going to make the most money.
That's interesting because I'm always suggesting to smaller bands to kind of have a few more trinkets but I guess it makes sense because my theory is sort of if I'm a DIY band playing to 30 people on a Tuesday in Chattanooga,
yep,
I'm a lot more likely to sell a $5 koozie to someone than a $25 shirt.
It's true.
You know, and I'm looking to make a gallon of gas, literally.
Mm-hmm.
But I also guess at your level, it's like someone buys a koozie and you're like, okay, that impact is relatively minor to a Killswitch Engage versus a Capra.
It's also the time it takes for me to do that transaction. It's like,
well, that's what I was about to say too, is that it's not. And like, also who would stand, like no one's going to stand in line to buy like a 3-inch by 3-inch Killswitch Engage patch.
But it happens. They get up there and they're like, I'll just take the $5 patch. And you're just like,
well, yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you feel like,
yeah.
But yeah,
I'll say, are you sure? Is there anything else I can get? Is there anything else I can get you is the best thing? Because now you're like, that's when they second guess themselves and they'll be like, oh, that shirt that I was kind of on the fence with, I'll take that one too.
This is what I wanted to ask you is like, what's the secret dialogue? And so that's the secret line.
It's probably just that you want to keep it short and sweet. And you don't, like I said, for me, I don't want to open it up to another conversation because now there's people in that line that are waiting. The worst is when people will try a shirt on and then they don't want it and they'll try a different shirt on, but it's the same garment blank that we're using. So it's like that shirt you're wearing is going to be the exact same sizing as one that you're, you know, the other ones.
I also never got that because like generally people are putting the shirt on over the shirt they're currently wearing.
That's the Europe thing. They'll put it on and be like, it's too small. I'm like, you're wearing a hoodie. Like you just put a shirt on over the hoodie. Yeah, of course it doesn't.
Like, I'm not sure what you want, man. But okay.
I've seen it all. You just got to be patient. And, you know, I just did a tour with a band that was 7 weeks long. And by that last show, like I was definitely on my last wits there. Like people were, and then the last day of the tour, all I had was like 2X and 3X shirts.
Oh yeah.
And there's 2,200 people there. And I have this massive line of people and they'll come up and, you know, it's a situation where I'm not facing everyone. They're like coming around a corner. So like they're only having moments to decide, but then they ask me for the shirt and I only have 2X and 3X and I have it all labeled what I have left, but it's still, you know, people need time to look and assess what's going on in their brains and they just didn't have it. So I was losing it, man. Just yelling at people by the end, just like, I don't have it. You're small. I have 2X. Take it or leave it.
How much of that is your responsibility to calculate the sizes you're ordering?
For certain bands, I do the ordering. And for other ones, like I said, the merch company, they're the ones that do it. So in that case, when it's not my fault, I don't care, really. I didn't do it. So
sure. But when it is your fault, how do you figure out those sizes?
I feel devastated, man. Like, you know, that's it's potential sales that I'm missing out on for the band. And I mean, at the end of the day, that's my goal, is to make whoever I'm working for the most amount of money. So when it's something that I've messed up on, when you start with a tour, you start with your stock, and then a couple of days in, you can kind of see what's working and what's not. Yeah. Planning ahead is the most important thing. And then also knowing that the company you have behind you printing this stuff is able to rush order some stuff for you, because, you know, you gotta weigh out the cost of overnighting a couple boxes versus running out of a shirt. You know, like, I could run out of a shirt, and if it's not a great seller, whatever, but if it's something that I know I'm going to gross $3,000 or something off of one shirt, then yeah, overnight a box and it charge me the $300 or whatever. So
yeah. And then you just add that to your cost per shirt, right? Like, that's how I'll generally do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just an extra expense at the end, but the amount of money you're going to make versus the expense, it makes 100% sense to do it. So
I want to go to the other side of your business now for a minute. You were talking before about sort of coordinating these limited drops, and that sort of being a key piece of the merch company. Talk to me about that for a second. What does that process look like? How are you marketing them? What's the strategy there?
First and foremost, the best thing for anyone is to, from my angle, is to really understand the band, know the band. Like, the band that I kind of started with, I didn't really know much about them, but I did a whole bunch of research after I started working for them, because I wanted to know. I wanted to consume all the information, learn about all the releases, all the members that have come and gone, yada, yada. So once I felt like I had a grasp on that, then you kind of know who your fans are. And when you do the shows, after a while, you're like, I think this style of shirt would work, because half the people that are coming to these shows are wearing, you know, something like this. So knowing who your fan is, and knowing their releases. And then when it comes to limited drops, you're like, oh, like, for instance, I have a couple bands that have 20th anniversaries or 25th anniversaries of records or 10-year anniversaries. It's like, for the albums that weren't maybe, you know, the top album for that record, for that band, but, you know, people still like that band, and there are always going to be people that like certain records. For the ones where it's a kind of middle of the road record, just do a small release, but do something, because not only are you releasing that stuff, but you're able to put content out, like, hey, you know, fans of this record, like, we hear you, here's this stuff, this small capsule of merch items that we're putting out that are pre-order only, and, you know, you can get these now, and then once they're done, that's it. And then same thing for like quintessential albums, you know, maybe release a little bit more, but I always try to keep it limited. I'll either do like a drop that's only available for pre-order, or if it's not just an album and it's just like a, I'll try to do like a seasonal thing, like, oh, you know, spring's here, here's some spring items, summer's here, here's some summer shit, you know. And it really depends on how much merch the band is actually moving. If it's a good big merch selling band, then, you know, cast a big line and see what you can get out of it. But if you're kind of just starting off, I would keep it pretty simple and try to see if you notice any trends as far as like what does well for you and what doesn't. Cause I mean, yeah, you can make a lot of money in merch, and you can also lose a lot of money if you print a bunch of crap and do a bunch of like really high end limited items, and then they don't sell. And then now you're sitting there staring at them. So,
I mean, it's definitely wild how the words limited edition are like a secret hack into the human psyche.
Totally. And it's cool when it actually is.
Oh, 100%. Like, I think it's badass when you can be like, oh, no one else has this. Like, we just got an LP that was like one of 100. And I was like, oh, that's way sicker.
Totally. Because, you know, you and 99 other people have it, and that's it.
Yeah, like, and I like that idea of, this is sort of like the NFT thing, but not as shitty.
Totally.
Where it's like, I can identifiably prove that we are, my girlfriend and I are in the top 100 Alcest fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, because we have this thing and y'all don't, which like is kind of a shitty way to say it, but that's also like kind of the feeling I think people have when they buy a one of 100 thing for $50.
Totally. They want to know that they're part of like that elite fan base that, you know, I'll spend whatever, I just really like what you do and I want to support the band. You're ultimately supporting the band and letting them know that, like, hey, I'm here long term. Like, I'm not just some.
Yeah, this matters to me. Yeah.
This is everything. I'll do whatever. Cause you know, like the one band I'm working for, they're breaking up and it sucks, but it's also like, now you got people coming out of the woodworks that haven't been there for a while. You know, it's cool to see that. Cause everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, it's always nostalgia, at least for a lot of the bands that I work for. They don't have that like up and coming buzz or whatever. It's more like they've had it and they still do everything they can to maintain the people that are still there.
No, and you've locked in a very specific type of punk.
Yes, I have.
Was that the music you grew up listening to, or did it just kind of happen?
It kind of happened. I mean, I always listened to it, but it was never like on the forefront.
Sure.
I always enjoyed my shitty radio nu metal. That was always my thing. And then it, you know, because where I didn't have like a cool older brother who was like, yo, listen to this underground music. It was like whatever the hell the radio was playing. But then I did find punk in that whole world, and then I definitely became very involved.
No shit.
With the music there. So it's been weird. It's been a weird ride, and I feel like every person involved in music, it's a weird ride. It's like, how did you start? And it's like, well, I worked at a store and one of my friends was like, hey, you want to come out on tour? And then it just kept going from there. So
that's like the like my favorite quote in that movie Almost Famous is when his bag bursts open in front of the hotel and the tour manager's like, why'd you bring all this stuff? And he says, I kept thinking I'd go home the next day.
Yeah.
Which is, you know.
Yeah.
It's what it is. So final question on the limited drop thing before we wrap up. Is there anything you're excited, like any concepts you're excited about beyond just shirts, about doing a limited drop of? Do you see yourself doing a limited trinket run? You know, like I know there's that pin company that does like some really wild pins. We did some with Ingested recently. I don't know. Is there some other item you see on the horizon as like the limited drop item?
I think that's all dependent on the band, and like jam bands and punk bands are going to be two completely different fan bases. So I worked for a band that kind of gave me PTSD with trinket items because they had like 50 table items, and like I'd have to set that shit up every day. I'd have to count that shit every day. And it was just like, I haven't sold any of this. I've sold one of that every night. And it's like, to me, having that big of a spread, like I said, people come up and they're just, it's shock.
They just don't know what to do. Yeah.
Their brain's overloaded. So when you have a limited thing, it kind of forces you to like hone in on, okay, sure. I like that and I like that. I'll take both of them instead of like, well, and you know, that then you start holding up the line. So anyways, as far as like trinket items that are coming up, no clue, man. Like it's all whatever's trending. And to me, you know, you have like a one of 100 album. That's cool. And trying to do things that are in the vein of the band that you're working for. I mean, it's kind of like whatever I feel like if the band likes it, then they could do whatever they could put out whatever they want, because their fan, if a fan really loves the band and they're like, oh, they made this comic book or they made this, whatever the hell it is, like glass vase, you know, whatever the band.
Can you imagine touring with something like that?
No, one of the first ones I did, we had coffee mugs and I never again. It was just like,
I managed this band that had like a horse figurine.
Okay.
And it was like, I remember seeing it and being like I kind of was like, I'm not doing a lot of the trinkets you want to do, but if you want to buy them, we'll sell them.
Yeah.
And I remember showing up to pack everything up for a tour, and they had these horse trinkets where the horse was on his back hooves. And I was like,
what are we doing, guys?
This isn't going to survive like a week, bro.
Yeah. And that, like with trinkets, like the minimum orders are usually kind of not low. Like, yeah, it's like, sometimes a minimum will be 100, but sometimes it's like 500. And it's like, man, if this doesn't sell, we're literally going to have 500 of whatever the hell this is for the next few. I had ice scrapers was like the worst one I could think of. These like plastic $2 ice scrapers. And I'm like,
that's so man. Weird.
And they put the year on it too. So like I said, now like you have this item.
Arbitrary deadline.
Yes. It's bad. If you're a band that can move merch, putting the timeline on it is good, because people are like, oh, that's from this year or whatever. But if you know you're not moving a lot of stuff, it's probably in your best interest to avoid ever putting a date on anything.
Or if it's a dice roll item like an ice scraper.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was, again, and that was one of the, that was the band that had a million items, and it was just like, we could have totally not had these, and it would have, you know, you had to pay for these, so this actually cost you money, and now they're just going to sit in the corner of the trailer for this entire tour, and then you're going to put them online, and then no one's going to buy them there, and then you're going to bring them back on tour, and no one's going to buy them there, and it's just like this
and thing they're gonna where have you, the wrong year on them still.
Yeah, you're just going to have this item that just never goes away. So yeah, I mean, small t-shirt items, and try to understand your fans as best you can. I mean, to me, it's like, if you're a fan of a band, you'd like to think the members of the band are, there's some sort of common thread or something that they like. So if the band's super stoked on this thing, you would hope that the fans would be, to some extent. Obviously not an ice scraper, that's just like a shot in the dark, that was an epic fail, but I didn't make that choice, so, you know, I don't have to deal with it. I just have to look.
I like the level of resentment. Is there anything I should be asking you before we wrap this up? Anything you want to dig into before we call her a day?
At some point, we talked about merch cuts, but that's like a whole nother.
Do you want to give us like your like 2-minute overview of merch cuts and your opinions? And yeah,
absolutely. I think they're terrible. I understand why venues do them. It's because they can get away with it. But if you go to any other country like Europe or Australia, they give you like a really small fee, or they'll charge you like per person that shows up. So like if you're in a venue and there's 1,000 people there, they'll charge you 10 cents a person that walk through that venue, the door. So you're only paying, you know, $100. Great. And then you got other places where they're like, we just want 10 shirts for free. So you give them that. This is all overseas. But then you come to America and they're like, oh, well, the band has their own rep who's going to sell all night, and then we're going to count everything, and then you're going to give us 20% of what you sold, even though we have no stake in the expenses and costs that all this has caused the band. So I think it sucks. I don't think it's ever going to go away, because Live Nation AEG makes so much money off of it. It's just who and where, like, I mean, every week it seems like something pops up where a band's like, you know, we're not going to stand for this. And it's, how do we get the bands and the agents and everybody involved where that they take a stand and do some sort of change? Because there's already enough people with their like hands in the band's pockets. And it's just like, you're like basically in a band for fun now, especially if you're starting out. Like, if it's that, like you were saying, that's gas money, or that's, that's the difference of staying in a hotel versus sleeping on the bench in a van or at someone's house or whatever. Like,
well, and that's like my favorite, like, shitty shitty small venue thing to do is when they're like taking a merch cut on the band who played to 25 people.
Yeah, totally.
Because I've seen that done, and I'm like, okay, bro.
Even the opening band on a big tour, it's like, okay, it's the same thing. They were at maybe a couple months ago, that band that did play in front of 25 people. It's like nothing's really changed. They're just opening, they're supporting on this big tour, but like they're still the band that's struggling the most, unless you see them and like everyone's buying a shirt. But like if they're the opening band and the room is like 25% full, and then the end of the night it's full, like they're a non-factor. Don't take their money. Just let them be. And for the big bands, it is what it is. I don't know. I hope something changes, because it's not fair, but what are you going to do? I don't know. It's so infuriating to me, especially when I see my bands, you know, that I work for every night having, the worst is when the rep comes at the end of the night and they've never, the whole time you've been in there, haven't introduced themselves. And then they're just like, hi, I'd like to take 20% of all the money that you've made tonight. It's like, you want me to give you like $4,000 for just nothing? Like providing me a wall and a light? That's not,
yeah,
it's not worth it.
My favorite is when it's like an especially shitty venue or an especially shitty merch spot. And it's like I remember it happening to a band where you had to go upstairs to get to the venue, and they made the band set up their merch on one of the landings on the stairs up. So they weren't in the room. So you had to go down the... So first of all, like...
Yeah, fire hazard, jeez. You
know, second, like, that's what you're going to bill me for, man? Like...
Yeah, bands will cheat the system which I'm all for.
Sure.
The bands I work for, it's like you're dealing with all these people, these agents and these venues and like the reps for certain regions so much that like in some instances, it's not even worth it. Like you're going to see that person the next day or in 2 days or on the next tour. And it's just like, you know, you keep it by the books, but it still hurts a lot when you're delving out that much money. And like the show we were at, I was giving the guy some grief at the end. I was like, hey, like, you know, 20% for what? Like I had to use I had to tether off my phone to use Wi-Fi for credit card sales. And then like, we had to end up setting our own router up to sell merch. And I'm like, what are we doing here, man? Like, you can't just take money and not give me anything. I mean, giving me a table is one thing, but it's not worth that much money that you're taking. I'll just bring my own table. Like,
yeah, like shockingly, we got
tables. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I'll go spend $60 to get a fold up table and a black, you know, table skirt, and you can just go on your merry way. So to me, the fairest thing is a flat rate, because taking thousands of dollars for doing nothing is not fair when they're making tons of, like a lot of the bands I work for are very heavy drinking bands. And it's like for us to not make any of that, but you can take our merch when it's the exact same scenario. Like we had to pay for it in advance. You had to pay for your alcohol in advance. You have to pay your bartenders to sell it. The band has to pay for a vendor to sell it. It's the same thing. And it's just like, I don't know why over here, you know, the culture is that, but everywhere else you go, yeah, it's $100 fee. Just pay it that or give us 10 shirts. And I always give the shirts away because that ends up being even cheaper than.
What's funny to me with it is, so you know that a lot of the merch fee stuff actually comes from the hardcore scene. That's what started it. So the story I've been told, I don't know the accuracy.
I'll tell you mine after you tell me yours, I'll tell you mine.
So the story I was told was that straight edge bands would play bars.
Yep.
The bartenders were like, well, shit, no one's drinking, or they're buying club sodas.
Yeah.
And they're 18, so they don't know how to tip.
Yeah.
We need a cut of the merch, which actually kind of makes sense when you think about it. Like,
it does.
If you're going to fill a room with a bunch of people who don't drink, okay. Like, you have staff to pay, and you were paying your staff off the drinks. Go ahead.
Yep.
So and then it kind of devolved to the bullshit it is now. I'm curious for the story you've been told.
The story that I was told, Bill Graham is a giant producer in San Francisco.
Sure.
And he's very famous. Bill Graham Presents is like a lot of crap out there. But what I heard was Bill Graham got the contract to sell Eagles merch for an Eagles tour. And he's like, all right, well, I'm taking a percentage of this. And that was like the first time, because they had the tour, but they're like, all right, we want to sell merch. And he's like, I'll take care of it. I just want a percentage of it. So then that's where the merch percentage that I heard, that's how I heard. I'm very curious where this actually did start, but that's what I heard. And what you're saying absolutely does make sense too, because it happens today. You get like a K-pop band where it's all 16-year-old kids that don't drink. It's like, well, that bar is going to be handing out a lot of water.
Yeah. And just to circle back on that, it's also like, if you talk to people who run like bigger venues, they will tell you they'd rather do half capacity with a metal show than full capacity with like an indie pop show, because the metal or punk show will just drink more.
Totally. And they make more money
than the indie pop show. So we would rather do that.
Yeah. And I mean,
which makes sense.
For some of the bands, like we get a lesser percentage. It's like 80-20 is on the high end, but some of the bands I do, it's negotiated down to 90-10. Or if it hits a certain amount of ticket sales, it's lower to a different percentage. Like, I would say that's fine, but it's still not. It's still a lot of money, like, especially when you're looking at the way it's done in other places. So, like I said, I don't know what it's going to take for change to happen in there. But as far as independent bands go and DIY bands, like, it's absolutely devastating. And it's so sad that, you know, you're going to take a percentage on a band that just played for 25 people at 6 o'clock. On a Tuesday, like, give them a break, man. Throw them a bone. So
just be cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's like, be cool. I know you're running a club, and all of us took a massive hit during COVID, but we're coming out of it now, and you should be able to run your bar and make profits, and the band should be able to play music and bring people in or not. Maybe you signed a bad contract and then, you know, You paid the band too much money. That's
on you.
Part of the business, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Brian. I'll link to all your stuff in the show notes. Thank you for being here, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, so that was awesome. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more, and above all, keep it heavy.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.